There is nothing like a little mind easing every once in a while. I mean, go out, go fishing, escape from reality, sit back, watch the waves. Every once in a while, get bothered by a pesky old fish here or there. Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in the chaos center. And his job is to make sure I don't do something stupid or say something stupid. How would you like to have that job? Not me, buddy. I'm very happy just being the one that says the stupid stuff, and, you know, he figures it out. Anyway, Sheephead. Weird. It's probably tied into the El Nino, and that's what we're going to talk about that later. But the weather pattern this year went from normal into El Nino. That's why it got so warm so fast. You could tell, literally, it was cold, 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 boom, got warm, got nice, a little bit of extra rain, but El Nino kicked in. Robert, is that why we have so many big sheephead in right now? Where are the sheephead? How big are they? And how are they catching them?
I mean, they're catching them mostly along the intercoastal, both around the trestles and bridges and the nearshore reefs, but they're catching a lot of fish up inside the mangroves and some of the oyster bars, you know, in particularly Turtle Bull Bay and Widden Bay, that whole area through there. They're catching fish up to 23 inches.
You were telling me some guys went out and, well, I don't remember, but you told me about guys. It was pretty impressive.
Well, they went into Turtle or Bull Bay to fish for snook and redfish, and they were way in the back where all those old broken down boats and houseboats and whatever else used to be in there. And they started catching sheep's head, and they got five apiece or whatever it was. They just stopped fishing for the redfish and snook because they started catching all these big sheep's head, and their smallest one that they kept was 17, I think he said. But their biggest one was 23 inches or 22 and a half, some ridiculous size.
Well, when you're thinking about 22-inch fish, now think that that fish is almost as tall as he is long.
Yeah.
And they're rather narrow fish, chunky narrow, but they're very tall. At 23 inches long, he's probably 14 inches tall or better.
Yeah.
Maybe 15 inches tall. And all that broadside to you, he starts swimming out trying to go in a circle. He can literally put his entire body flat to you. So when you're trying to pull him in, it's a tremendous amount of drag, a tremendous amount of water pressure you've got to pull to get that fish coming at you.
Absolutely. It's like pulling a bucket through the water.
Exactly. Like throwing a 1 gallon bucket out and trying to reel it in.
Yeah.
That's fighting.
Yeah.
A mad, upset, angry bucket.
Yeah, and he caught all those on shrimp, but we've had guys that have been buying a lot of fiddler crabs that are fishing from their boats and from the piers and doing extremely well on them. Even a handful of guys are catching them from Boca Beach and Stump Pass also, so they're just casting out in the passes and using fiddler crabs and shrimp and still doing pretty well from the beach. Not so huge numbers, but they are pretty quality fish.
What about Placida? How's the trestle doing?
Doing really
it's pardon okay. Me. You can just croak out right there.
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Be all right. Not my problem after that.
Yeah. You're good, Robert. You know, just gag yourself, choke, roll around the floor. RJ and I will laugh good on that one.
There you go. Get it on video. The Placida trestle's doing really good for the land-based fishermen, and even the Anger Pier right there in Inglewood, right by the Tom Adams Bridge. I'm going to get some reports. And also off the jetties in Northport. That picked up a little bit this week.
Northport?
I'm sorry, in Venice.
Okay.
Sorry. We're in Northport.
I was thinking Northport jetties. I'm like, okay. No. You know, you come out with stuff I'm not aware of, so.
No, my brain's just moving 100 miles an hour to try to remember all the different fishing reports I've gotten in the past week and a half.
What's the best rig up for, say, Placida, trying to get some of those bigger sheepheads? Now, if you're in Bull Bay and you can find some deep water right by the mangroves, it's not uncommon. When you come in the head the entranceway to Bull Bay, where the fish shack is right there on the south end, you're coming up in there. If you go about three quarters of the way across, make a left, go straight at that shoreline. It's all deep water along the mangroves. Now, up in front of you, there's several spots of deep water underneath those mangroves. Now, is this a free-line thing with the fiddler crab? I don't know how you would cast it up to the mangroves. You'd almost have to have, like, split shots or something heavy enough, maybe a water-filled casting bubble.
Yeah, that would work, but most of the guys that are doing it are using just a jig head or just a hook with a split shot on it.
So what kind of jig head has a small enough hook? Maybe a Rockport Rattler?
The Rockport Rattler definitely has a small enough hook, but these guys are using some pretty big jig heads on some of these sheep's head. They're big enough to take it in. It's pretty surprising.
But I mean, if you're using a fiddler crab, how are you going to do that? I understand pitching a shrimp underneath there.
I don't know, but I mean, they're buying shrimp and fiddler crabs, but the one guy said they killed them in there on fiddler crabs, that not the guys that were in the back, but the guys that have been fishing like Whidden Creek, Catfish Creek, all the Whidden Bay. He was fishing on jig heads, and he was using shrimp and fiddler crabs both.
Well, I can see a fiddler crab on a like a 1/8 ounce or 1/4 ounce Rockport Rattler with a 1/0 hook.
Right.
But most of them, I don't know how you would...
Most of them have too wide of a gap and too...
Just too big, yeah. Well, you know, you never know, but yeah. It's okay. Charles and Vicky, they own Rockport Rattler. They don't mind when I advertise their product, you know.
Right.
Nice folks in Rockport, Texas. Great company. Wonderful people. So, sheephead all over the place.
Yeah, it's been some good numbers. And the guys that are fishing, Novak, Helens, Mary's, all the real close to shore reefs, been catching quite a few sheep's head too, in addition to the few grunts and porgies, even a couple of small permit and pompano on some of those near shore reefs also. So,
all right. The big question, how long is it going to last?
At the rate it's keeping up right now, honestly, I'd be surprised if it lasted another 3 or 4 weeks tops.
I was just going to ask, do you think it'll last till next Monday?
Yeah.
You think it'll last through the weekend?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean...
I think three or four weeks is out of the question. I don't think that's going to happen.
It's
but
just changing.
Do you think this weekend...
Oh, yeah. I think this little cold front that we had, and we had enough wind with it for a couple evenings, and tomorrow's supposed to be actually like in the high 40s. Tomorrow's supposed to be the coldest morning of it all.
Yeah, that's what those people at the Discovery Channel want to take jet skis out.
Nice. Yeah. So
I've been working with some of the TV shows, you know, that are on Discovery Channel. And that's always a trip. When you're dealing with people based in Los Angeles and New York, can you imagine how screwed up their thinking is? You can't even begin to imagine. I can tell you that.
Right. And the only weather they know is the stuff they see in the travel guides for Florida. It's always sunny and warm and no breeze.
I've become very good friends with one of the producers of the show. And he's awesome, literally one of the nicest people I've ever met. And this poor guy, he'll make plans and get everything figured out for the weather, the conditions, and then L.A. calls him up. Oh, no, we want to do this. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
And I worked with him quite a bit. Awesome folks. Love the show. I'm not going to name the show, but into something, King Mackerel is... I think El Nino is what brought them back into our area, because the king mackerel had all pushed north, and we didn't have hardly any here, and then all of a sudden this water started warming up, which is what gave them the momentum to run north, but now all of a sudden they're back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the cooler weather up there, because a lot of those fronts have been stalling out from just north of Tampa, so from, what is that, Cedar Key area north, has had a lot cooler weather than we have, so I think it's created just that kind of an invisible line that the fish don't want to cross as far as the temperatures go. So it pushes down a little bit and then backs off a little bit, but that seems to be that consistent border that's there.
Well, school me on temperature with kings.
68 to 72 degrees is the prime temperatures for
and that's
king
where
mackerel.
They want to stay.
That's what they're looking for. Under normal circumstances, in the fall, when it starts getting below 68 up by Pensacola, the fish start moving south. And in normal years, in the summertime, the water up by Pensacola is cooler. And the fish want to go up there, hang out in that cooler water. Not cold, but cooler, 68, 72, low 70s. But what happens is, in the last few years, Pensacola and the Fort Myers, they've been the same temperature. So they kind of go up there, hang out till it kind of gets the same as everywhere else, then just come back feeding along the coast. Kind of change the whole migratory pattern of the kings. And with this cool spell, like Robert said, it brought them back south. So we've got kings again.
Yeah. And with the abundance of bait that we're seeing out there, I think that's really keeping them around. But talking to one gentleman yesterday, he was telling me about the commercial guys actually moved all their stuff south, because last week I was hearing of commercial fishermen from Inglewood down to Captiva catching king mackerel, but
I just looked on fishandfranks.com. Pensacola is 62 degrees, St. Pete is 69, and Naples is 72. So we're in that 70, 71 degrees prime king mackerel temperatures. We're actually a little bit below average Gulf temperature all the way around. So that's a good sign. But absolutely, that's why the kings came back. You go on fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, hit the Gulf temperature button, look for, first one you'll see is Key West, Naples, St. Pete. There's all for the whole states on there. But what we are concerned with on this coast is Naples, St. Pete, Pensacola. That tells us where the fish are going to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, El Nino.
Now, why wouldn't the Keys matter?
Well, Naples is before the Keys, so I don't care.
Right, but Tampa is before the Panhandle.
Yeah, but I have to take Naples, St. Pete, kind of go in between that to figure our temperature, because we don't have a temperature gauge here.
Right.
So I use those two to figure our temperature, and then I use Pensacola at the top end, and once they're past Naples, it doesn't matter to me. Nobody listens to us below there. If anybody listening between Naples and Key West, you give me a call. I will make sure I add that in every time.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing that makes it a little less relevant personally is because our shoreline and our topography is very similar from Naples all the way up to the Panhandle, as far as it being a bit of shallow bowl, being much greatly more affected by water temperatures than, say, the Keys, which has a continental shelf on one side and the Gulf on the other, which can totally change your migratory pattern of any of the species of fish.
Or it could be I just blew it off and forgot to talk about them.
Yeah. You know, I knew that.
One way or the other.
I'd go with number two.
Yeah. Me too.
I don't think there's a lot of question about what happened there.
But still interesting.
Spanish mackerel.
Yep.
For a little while, they were all the way up by the 41 bridge.
Yep.
Did it get too cold? Is that why they moved out?
They
like it warmer. They're looking for 75, 80 degrees.
Yeah, they like it a little bit warmer. But to be honest with you, those fish that were at the 41 bridge were just really scattered. It seemed like as you got to like south of Pirate Harbor or just below Cape Hayes was where the very, very consistent numbers were at. So I think that those fish that are moving up into the upper harbor are following that tide line and following a lot of the different bait fish and glass minnows and stuff like that that are around. And because we've had quite a bit of fresh water, honestly, all winter coming out of the Myakka and the Peace River, I mean, not a great deal, but just enough to maybe screw things up, that I think they're following that tide line coming in, but then turn around and following right back out with some of the bait that's pushing out.
Okay, I'm going to jump out of order here because I want to go to the bait for a minute. There's bait everywhere out there, boys and girls.
Yes.
Excluding pinfish.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been tough.
All right. Now, Robert thinks too many pinfish died in the red tide and the black tide. And the black tide was actually way worse than the red tide. And the only reason, you have to understand that anybody with an IQ of over 75 is not qualified to work for any major network news. So it really puts them just in a hole.
Well, I'm just a volunteer here, so I don't technically work here, do I?
But you're not network news.
That's right.
You're not network news. You're an independent news person.
That's right. That makes the difference.
You've probably got, well, I'm not even going to guess what your IQ is because it would embarrass mine. But not blowing smoke. I know how smart you are. The big thing is every year, the reason there are no pinfish bait guys, the pinfish disappear for weeks and months at a time.
Okay.
Every year. Every mm-hmm. year. How many pinfish guys have we had that come in and they're bringing us pinfish every day? We get hundreds of them, get all you want, and then boom, they're gone. And you're thinking the red tide did it. I think it's just that time of year where they're just not here.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, the problem is that the guys that are going out and physically looking for them during the wintertime, you can usually find them at least out by the crab traps just off the beaches with your sabiki rig or at the new channel markers just outside of Boca Grande Pass in fairly good numbers. They're struggling to catch just a few. And then you got the guys who are always looking for the white bait really early that just like to go throw their cast nets. There's not as many guys catching any of the young adults. You know, there's none of the little tiny, tiny, tiny ones around as much as normal. So,
And we had a discussion in a previous show, the one that you weren't able to make, Frank. We were talking about the images of all the dead fish in the red tide. And, of course, everybody was focusing on the big dead redfish and the big dead snook. And we were talking about the bait fish. I mean, they were 90% of the pile. And in those pictures, I think there were a lot of pinfish.
Oh, I'm 100% sure of it. It's just that I know because of where the red tide was and where the red tide was not. Pinfish could have easily been in the harbor on the west side, east side. There should have been a ton of pinfish in the harbor and more pinfish outside. Now, I will agree with Robert for part of it. Because when the black tide hit, that killed almost everything from the beach out to the 20-foot mark. That was horrific. Red tide is a wuss when it comes to red tide, black tide. I mean, the black tide is a killer. Everything died from 20-foot in for that few days. So that I could possibly see. But inside, there should have been plenty of pinfish left.
Should have been.
Should have been. Okay, but either way.
And it could be that an event like red tide just exaggerates the normal cycle. So, you know, we're probably both right in this, that there's times of the year when the pinfish just aren't here. But then you get an event like the red tide, and it makes that bracket bigger, more intense, because there were less fish to leave in the first place.
All right. Now, I will go with that. I'm on board with that. I usually find no matter what you do in life, if it's way over there on the left or way over there on the right, it's not the truth. The truth is almost 99% of the time somewhere in the middle. And, you know, I wish people would remember that for environmental and political and everything else. The truth is never on the far sides. It's always somewhere in the middle. Now, with all these pinfish that are not there, that are starting to come back, mm-hmm. Now, we've learned over the last year, you would think after 35 years I would have known this, but pinfish is a migratory species. They grow up in the harbor, leave, and live as an adult in the Gulf of Mexico. They're not a shallow water fish. We almost never see a true adult 3/4 pound, 1 pound pinfish, 1.5 pound pinfish in the harbor. But the Gulf is full of them. So they grow up in the backcountry, go out to live their lives in the Gulf. But this year, everybody said, why, with all the red tide, all of the other stuff, everything else, and you know what it could have been, is just simply a lack of people, lack of cast nets. The charter boat captains were going out of business left and right. They got whiny all over the internet. Man, I got no fish, everything's dead. Bunch of whiny, you know, weirdos. They weren't cast netting.
Right.
We have more white bait, more thread fins, more Spanish sardines, more of all these other fish than I've seen in 10 years. Yeah. This is the number one bait year I've seen in 10 years. There's more bait around.
Right.
I mean, I was catching Spanish sardines all the way up by the 41 bridge.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I mean, I haven't seen that since the early 90s, or the late 90s, rather. Right. I think 2003 was the last time I caught Spanish sardines up by 41. Catch them fairly regularly down towards by the reef, but wow, that was extreme.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what do you think would have caused such a massive amount of white bait, sardines, greenbacks, herring, all that, to pop up this year. I mean, consider what's happened over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is fewer predators around and for them to want to move inside right along the beaches, you know, maybe because of some of those snook being wiped out and some of the trout population being hammered.
Things for bait fish are powered by Yamaha.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
I mean, the number one predator of white bait is powered by a Yamaha.
Yeah, yes, I will agree with that wholeheartedly.
Sorry.
No, you shouldn't be apologizing because that's true. I mean, the amount that that people take is pathetic, sad,
greedy. You ever
want to
do get a calculator or your phone out, figure 100 pieces of bait times 50 boats a day times 365. So 50 times 100 times 365. Look at that number. It's in the millions. That's how many pieces of bait get taken each year, minimum. Now, let's go on. What's up tarpon fishing? Everybody's been waiting for the tarpon. Everybody's talking about tarpon. We had tarpon in Boca Raton Pass. Where are they now? Where did they go? Did they retire? Did they move to a home in Boca? They quit doing tours, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I haven't
got... Did the lead singer quit?
No, he OD'd probably.
Oh, okay.
the tarpon that were in the past, I haven't heard.
You can do it!
The tarpon that were in the past, I haven't heard anything about for 3 days because of the foul weather we've been having. It's been a little lumpy out there, plus a lot of people don't like to fish in the rain, so I think that's part of it. But there's been fish in the pass and down off the beaches off of Knapp's Point, off of Sanibel. And those fish are all migratory fish. I mean, they're showing up coming in from the south and coming in from offshore. I think that this only is a minor setback. I think the tarpon are still in there in pretty good numbers. But the problem with fishing that pass when those tarpon first show up is that it's a nighttime and very first thing in the morning thing. It's tricky to get those fish dialed in to what they're feeding on, having the right tackle and all that. And we are just coming off. Was last night the full moon or the night before last?
Last night, full moon.
Last night was a full moon and a super moon on top of that, which is first one in like 30-something years to happen on the springs.
On the equinox, right?
Equinox.
Right.
And
we had the highest and lowest tides of the year also yesterday and today, I think it is.
So that can play a really big role on those tarpon because sometimes, you know, they just go offshore and hang out in that little deeper, calmer, more relaxed water because we are going to have such a huge volume of water pulling out and pushing back in. The barometric pressure jumped yesterday. It was kind of weird talking to Carl and Danny Latham both. They said that fishing was okay in the morning but a little tough, but like at 11 for one of them and like 11:30 for the other one, fishing just shut down entirely, like nothing happened. And then Brian came in a couple hours later, and he had the exact same scenario, too, where he actually canceled his afternoon charter because it went so dead, he didn't want to risk taking somebody out. So something happened with either the moon, barometric pressure, something happened funky yesterday. It caused a lot of the fish to shut down in that noon on. And I think that could have affected those tarpon for at least a couple days.
Well, there has been a little bit of storms.
Yes.
Now, I haven't been keeping up on it, watching, like, the lightning track and all that.
Very minimal.
But if there's any thunder and lightning in Boca Raton Pass, it will push those tarpon 6-7 miles out into the Gulf.
Yeah.
I mean, two good lightning cracks, and they are hauling butt. They're doing 30 miles an hour out till they get to 60 feet of water anyway.
And the weirdest part, the one thing I've noticed about that is, why is it that that mostly is a, like 100% when it's overnight or in the first thing in the mornings, yet in the afternoon it doesn't seem to bother them nearly as bad? That's something I've noticed over the years, that just that if you get one of those afternoon thunderstorms that rolls in and rolls out right away, it doesn't seem to faze them.
If it was me, I might be a little bit tipsy by, you know, late in the afternoon. If I'm going to drink, it's probably late in the afternoon. It's hot, had a couple extra cocktails and wasn't thinking about it. Do fish ferment in the afternoon? Could they be eating, like, fermented fish and get just a little, I don't care about thunderstorm. Hey, hold my drink, watch this.
Right. I don't know about that.
I don't know. I have no idea what it would be.
Just one of those oddball observations, because you're 100% right, Warren. If the thunderstorms roll through out there, they all
And you always say that like you're surprised.
Me?
Yeah, like I'm 100% right, and you say it like you're surprised. Well, I don't get that.
You usually are.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, nobody's like, keeping score. Know. That's the problem. We should have a checklist here of how many times he gets it right.
Right.
I have to say, having been in underwater during a thunderstorm, it is loud. It is really loud, much louder than the boat engines when you get a clap of thunder.
Oh, you know, I never even considered that. I used to do a lot of windsurfing, you know, with the sailboard with the surfboard with the sail on it, the windsurfing thing. I used to be big into it, and the only time down here you get any wind to go all summer is when the thunderstorms. So I used to, you know, surf all the thunderstorms, but I don't think I've ever been underwater during a thunderstorm.
Yeah, and places like the pass, and any place that's more, you know, dish-shaped, like the pass would be,
right.
It's going to be even louder there. I've not ever been in the pass.
Funnel it through like a wind tunnel almost.
Yeah, exactly, right.
That would be like a sonic boom underwater.
Yeah, it'd be like a sonic boom and they're out of there. You know, just like they seem to have gotten used to the boat engines, you know, not being overly concerned about boat engines. But when you hear that thunderclap, it's 3, 4, 5 times louder than the loudest boat engine above you. So it's quite a bit of noise. And I can see we're in a sheltered area like the pass. They're just going to want to get the hell out of there. Now, I don't know why the afternoon thunderstorms don't do that to them, but...
Yeah, I didn't... This is literally... Robert brought this up, I think, for the first time today.
Well, it just clicked while we're... It literally just clicked while we were talking about it, because I've been out there a handful of times where we've had to, like, run over to Miller's Marina during a bad storm, but turn around and run right back out there, and the fish didn't leave. But it's always been in the afternoon. But if it's in the morning, you run right back out there right after that storm goes through, and there's not a fish there. They're gone.
All right.
So it just, it's one of those things that just popped in the head.
Here's the naughty answer. When do they really do the bulk of their spawning? Is that kind of middle of the day, late middle afternoon thing?
Most of the time it's late in the afternoon into the evening.
Oh, so they got something else on their mind.
So, I gotta tell you, there's a couple of times, you know, in my 20s or even 30s or whatever, where I was involved in a project and I wouldn't care about the thunderstorm either.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
I mean, okay. You know, you're
it's
asking
left,
me why...
But...
What's that?
That's pretty
boys and
left
girls,
out of the field there, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, no, but
boys
mean,
and girls,
know,
this is not scientific advice here.
No, but if you're looking and you're saying, okay, they leave when the thunderstorm at night, in the morning, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then in the middle of the afternoon, so obviously you have to figure out what's going on where it would be more important than the very loud noise or the chance of dying. And I can tell you, in my teens or 20s, that was probably more important than a chance of dying.
And, yeah, that's true. I could see that.
I mean, come on, cutie, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know
don't,
what else
don't
to
mind
say.
The background noise.
Yeah. Okay. Tarpon going through the pass. Any small ones going around anywhere else? Is there any smaller tarpon that people can play with? Are they still up on the river?
Yeah, they're definitely still up on the river. Both up on the Peace River side from...
I was trying to get myself out of that one. You weren't helping.
Nope. You dug the hole. I was going to let you keep going at it for a little bit. They're... Harbor Heights all the way up to just above the Navigator, hearing some mixed reports of them through there, and then also the Strait going up to Shell Creek, even all the way up past the trestle going into the Shell Creek spillway or dam, and then up on the Myakka River, still getting the same reports from El Jobin Bridge early in the mornings with a lot of juveniles around, to a lot of the juveniles to sub-adults coming all the way up to the 41 Bridge on the Myakka River. So, been some good reports on those, and the guys are catching a lot of the ones on the Myakka River on the 3-inch and 4-inch paddle tails or shad tails. You know, they're doing extremely well, and then a handful of guys are catching them on shrimp, miscellaneous other things, but the little paddle tails with a quarter-ounce jig head on them have been working, and it's been all colors, so play around with it and give it a shot.
All right, sharks. What's going on shark-wise? Everybody's gone shark crazy. They're enacting a shoreline beach license or something like that?
Yeah, permit or whatever it is. It hasn't taken into effect yet. The earliest it's going to take into effect will be July 1st, but they haven't even come up with the program for anyone to take the permit, and it's going to be a free permit, supposedly, that you get on your fishing license just like
you
do your snook
stand. But
you
have to take, like, a test to get it, like a boater safety course.
Yeah. You know, so we'll be curious.
Oh, there's another great idea.
Yeah, another real brilliant thing.
Oh, God.
We'll see how that goes, but right now it's not enacted yet. But the shark fishing itself, lots of bonnet heads around, especially like Cape Hayes, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, even starting to get some mixed reports of some good-sized bonnet heads moving along from Burnt Store up just to up above Pirate Harbor out there on the flats. And then there's been some decent black tips around. There's been some 3 to 4.5 footers on what you would call the straits, basically from Cape Hayes moving out to Boca Grande, and that whole area be basically Cape Hayes to Boca Grande over to Bacilia, out to Boca Grande. All on that area, black tips, some juvenile bull sharks, even a few bigger bull sharks. Mike Myers got into a couple hammerhead, you know, smaller hammerheads in that 6 to 7 foot range over there, which is very common this time of year because the sub-adult hammerheads actually follow king mackerel. That's very, very common for them because they are a very fast swimmer. And for some reason, those 6 to 8 foot hammers are very notorious for following right behind schools of king mackerel as they're migrating north or south. And then offshore, up until the other day, there was a bunch of shrimp boats that have been dragging out there, but they started to work their way south towards the Keys. Bull sharks, sandbar sharks, bigger hammerheads, some really big black tips, and a few spinner sharks have been out there just off the beaches. I know that the shrimp boats left, but those sharks, a lot of them follow those shrimp boats and will follow them all the way to the Keys. But some of those fish are going to still stay here because of the amount of bait fish, Spanish mackerel, king mackerel, and tarpon that are out there, because that's all prey items for them. So if you go out to one of the near shore reefs, even one of the far offshore reefs,
now,
you got
a good
chance.
Think that sharks are sitting there, oh Lord, please let me catch another big fish, and I'll promise to be a good shark tomorrow. You really think sharks prey?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, okay.
You know,
he was saying they were prey items, and I'm just wondering, I bet you meant it with an E.
Yes, I did.
Okay, yes.
Sorry.
And there was a report this past weekend of a fairly large bull shark that was up around the El Jobin Bridge. A number of people saw it going in and out from underneath the bridge. So there's some...
Not uncommon.
Yeah, there's some bigger animals around.
There's always a few of those around that come in, you know, and you got some of those ones that actually are early puppers.
It's like
March is is the very, very early beginning of pupping month for your large sharks, but April and May are your two peak months for all of your large sharks.
April, May, and June are when all the sharks are going to try and give birth.
Yeah.
And the one thing that's funny is every once in a while somebody sees one of these big sharks there, they are there 80% of the time. They come all the way up into Northport. They go way up the Myakka River. They're way up the Peace River. Bull sharks go all the way to Illinois on the Mississippi River. These are one of the few sharks that can lay on the bottom and sleep. They don't have to move. They can literally just go somewhere, lay down and sleep. They're fine. And unlike most other sharks. So lemons and bull sharks lay around out in these flats. You can find them in canals. They're the one dangerous thing, I would say, in the canals. Your odds of actually encountering one and having a problem with one is something like 1 in 14 million. But they are there, and they're there almost all the time. It's just when somebody sees it, they go, oh my God, there's a big shark here. Yep, that's about the way it works.
Now you want the weird shark story of the past week? Last week, one of the kids that comes in the shop every now and then, he was out offshore going fishing for Jewfish or Goliath grouper, and he was about 15 miles offshore because that seems to be where the more consistent numbers of them have been, and he was feeding out his bait because they all use super heavy line for those for some reason, And as he was hand-feeding it out, it got wrecked on the way down, his bait did. He locked up on it, figured a Jewfish came up to hit it, but it started peeling line off so fast when he went to lock it up. And about 15 feet in the air, launches a Mako.
He heard about the Mako being caught.
He got a 10-foot Mako. He landed it and released it safely. So, one of the few Makos that I've heard of in the last month and a half, 2 months, that have actually been released, because I've heard of a few up off of Sarasota, about 30 to 40 miles out, which would be the not so common but more realistic places to hook them.
Right.
So, for someone to catch one in at 15 miles, pretty impressive. You know, super, super cool. I got to see a couple of the video, a little video clip of it, and a couple of the still shots, and then the video of him releasing it next to the boat is pretty good size. I mean, I would put it at easily 9.5 to 10.5 feet, and his guesstimation was 10, so he was pretty spot on with his guess, but it was some cool video footage of it.
So, Mako sharks usually found in cooler waters.
Yeah.
And they're usually up in the northeast and that, but they do go out to the Gulf Stream. And people have always said, no, there's no Makos down here. But if you really think about it, they go off Jersey, New York, Massachusetts to go looking for Makos, and they go out to the Gulf Stream.
Yeah, and they have a pretty good population near shore up in the Panhandle where it drops off quicker. And those Makos will move from that deeper water in closer, following the cobia migration.
Right.
But they're there for a particular reason. They're following the manta rays, which are right in line with the cobia migration. So there's a specific reason why they move in close. So for here, unusual to get in that close right here, but still pretty awesome.
All right. Now, everybody's screaming this year, there's no trout, no trout, no trout. And while I'm not the brightest bulb in the box, I'm still continuing about a 40-watt dim glow, and I can remember the last 4 or 5 years we didn't get hardly any trout until spring.
Yeah, until it got really warm.
I mean, and the trout fishing went nuts, but this has been evolving, changing over the last several years. And I understand these eco idiots and charter boat captains and people in these environmental groups can't remember anything past their last two Facebook posts. But we have been seeing this trend more and more. Now, I don't know if it's a good thing, a bad thing, a good witch, a bad witch, or a sandwich. But I do know that this has been going on for the last several years. Normally, historically, November, December, two of the best trout months. And then it kind of moved to November, December, then December, January. And now it's literally not until the water gets warm do we see a big trout population. This is a crazy issue.
I think this year is a little bit of both, though. I mean, I think they got hurt pretty good. I don't think decimated or crushed by any stretch of imagination with what people are saying.
Right. But I think they're still allowed to take them commercially, right?
Yeah.
Commercial netter can go out and catch trout, sell them at a fish market.
Right.
It's not a game fish.
Nope.
It is a commercially available caught fish.
Yes.
So if we lost 20,000 pounds in that red tide or 50,000 pounds, that's only a few months worth of commercial fishing.
Probably only a few weeks.
It's either weeks or months of commercial fishing, so how come it's so dang catastrophic now? If the state wants to play around, they punish the recreational anglers because we have these conservation groups, and they work on the coast that, you know, are touting and pouting their chest. Well, we're getting the limits reduced, and we're getting these fish on catch and release. And I'm like, boy, it's nice to be for fish and against the fishermen. But if you can go out with a net boat, and you can commercially catch these trout, cast net them, and take them, sell them commercially, why is one red tide, oh my God, when they do that all year?
No, and I agree with that, but I'm just saying that because we've seen the numbers go down just a little tiny bit over the last several years.
Yeah, they have gone down.
In addition to the months changing and then the red tide, I'm thinking all of that has created it to be just a little bit more in your face.
And I will go along with that. I'm
not blaming one thing. I'm just saying it's the combination of all that kind of is more popped into your face. So people are always going to pick the easiest out and blame the red tide because they forgot about the time changes of the months changing each year, plus the commercial aspect of it. You know, all of those have...
Everything adds to it all. Absolutely. I'll go with that. My only problem is these people at the state and these conservation environmental groups going around beating their chest going, look at what we're doing. And it's like, you ever see a really not so attractive woman take a picture on Facebook where she holds it over there so you really can't see her, but in the what you can see, it looks pretty good? And it kind of reminds me of those bad selfies that, look how good I look when, no, I just only look good if I hold the camera exactly there.
Yeah. It's just smoke and mirrors.
And we just had the discussion about how many pounds of fish the commercial guys are taking. And how does that compare to how many pounds of fish with the limits that we have as a recreational angler? There's very little impact, at least in my limited opinion, of recreational angling on the trout population.
I would say recreational anglers cause a dent in everything. I'm 100% on with that. But I don't hear them, okay, we have a temporary moratorium, you're not allowed to commercially take trout. Only the recreational anglers, because it hits social media better.
Right.
Nobody's going to, you know, sing their praises if they cut off the commercial guys, because they pay good lobbyists. The commercial industry is not stupid. They pay big money to lobbyists who pay big money to the state, the people on the Marine Fisheries Commission, the, you know, FWC, our congressmen, our senators, these guys get good paychecks from the commercial fishing industry. That's what it's all about. That's why you don't hear it on there. But going back, I digress. Let's see. What's going on under the 41 bridge? Is something nefarious, something dastardly, or is it all warm and fuzzy with bunnies and unicorns and everything?
I guess it depends on what time of day you're in there, or at night, you know. They've opened that new river walk kind of thing that they're starting on, but there's that whole fishing pier section that they've been working on for, what, 2 years now underneath there?
Yeah.
I
would have stayed in marine construction if I could have got state
no
work.
No kidding.
I mean, to get paid that about a buddy and do that little work a day, I would have gone out of business.
And silly work of that. I mean, why couldn't they move it out 20 feet? I mean, yeah, the design of it was just a little goofy.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's done. And
I like the pier that's there. I think it's one of the few things they've actually done a nice job with. It's a nice little fishing pier. When you cast off the corner in a southeasterly direction, historically, it's been one of the best redfish areas for pier fishermen.
Yes.
Straight out in front of the pier, good for trout, possible Spanish mackerel down around the bridge pilings, great for black drum, snook. A lot of good fishing there, and, you know, it's wonderful to see that boardwalk open. They put some fishing access points on it. Yeah. Keep it clean, boys and girls. If you're out there, pick up your dead bait. Put it in the water. Don't let a plastic bag sit there. Everything should be as nice when you leave as it was when you got there.
No, I disagree.
I guarantee they will close it down.
I disagree with
100%
that.
100% guarantee. If it's not as clean when you leave as when you got there, they will end up shutting that down. They put that in so the rich people in Punta Gorda can walk across, meeting the rich people in this new big development, and they can all walk around. If you don't keep it clean, they're not going to allow us to be there.
It should be cleaner than when you got there. Period.
Okay, cleaner.
You know,
at least as clean.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why you can't pick up other stuff while you're out there. I mean, I've gone to the beach to not take my fishing equipment with me, and I still leave with more garbage than when I came with. I mean, whether it's a cigarette butt, whether it's a soda bottle or a piece of styrofoam, fishing line, it doesn't matter. There's no reason why you can't stop and take those extra couple seconds to pick up some garbage on your way in and on your way out to clean up, to help maintain it for everybody.
Well, I was out. I spent the day watching people film a TV show. And when I got back at the end of the day, I had a pocket full of cigarette butts.
Yeah.
Because you just take the coal off and put cigarette butt in your pocket. And if I see them lying on the ground, and there's a garbage can there, I'll take something to pick them up. But I don't know, people have weird diseases, so I always use something to pick them up.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. You know, I mean,
I actually don't. I just grab my fingers because I'm disgusting.
I'm not worried about it either, but I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that take care of the environment. They're not, you know, we're lucky enough to have all these places to fish from shore. Take advantage of it and take care of it.
Take care of it, not advantage. All right. The great part about that area down there, it's on the north end of the bridge. It's got a couple nice little piers. They've got some really great little spots to go and fish. You can actually, if it's a rainy day, this is an awesome section because you can literally stand underneath the bridge and fish and then go back out to where you want when the rain's done. This is an amazing little addition to our fishing community here because it's in a very good spot for fish. It's at the north end of the 41 Bridge. Now, if you live in Port Charlotte, you have to drive over the bridge into Punta Gorda. At the base of the bridge, turn left on Red Esplanade, go over to northbound 41, get back on northbound 41, stay in the far right lane, slow lane, it's close over there. When you get to the bottom of the bridge, you better be going slow, because where the concrete stops, you got just a few feet, driveway turns off to the right, it's not well marked, and it drops off. That whole section of the roadway there is elevated probably about 10 feet, and that driveway just drops right off that 10 feet down to the other driveway, so you can get back up there. But you cannot access it coming from the Port Charlotte side. You got to go to Punta Gorda and come back. Which isn't bad, because Punta Gorda's got some pretty cool stuff. I like taking a ride through downtown.
Oh, yeah.
I've actually stopped at a couple of restaurants, and we went to the restaurant there the other day. Which one was that? Leroy's?
Leroy's.
Yeah, we were at Leroy's.
Yeah, Leroy's is really good.
Yeah, it's a nice place downtown. There's a couple other ones. They got one on the corner. You can sit out of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all bad going through Punta Gorda. Now, if you live in Punta Gorda, we do ask that your visa be properly in place before you cross the bridge into Port Charlotte. But, you know, I mean, let's be this realistically. If you live in Punta Gorda, we want you to have all your visas and paperwork before you come across the bridge. Let's see. El Nino affects everything. What happened was, we go back to the Dust Bowl. Talk about crazy, wackadoo environmentalists, climate change, wackanuts. Well, yes, the climate changes. It changes all the time. In the the Dust Bowl era, back, that was the 30s, right? And what happened was the Atlantic got particularly warm and the Pacific got particularly cold. And La Nina, the little girl in Spanish, La Nina, is when the Pacific Ocean gets extra warm. El Nino, what we're going through now, is when the Pacific Ocean off of South America gets exceptionally cold. Now, the Atlantic got exceptionally warm, the Pacific got especially cold. That's what caused the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. The rain patterns just got nothing, and it just didn't rain. And it was over 10 years that lasted. And then all of a sudden, the Atlantic went back to normal, Pacific went back to normal, the rain started, and everybody forgot the Dust Bowl happened. But events like El Nino, La Nina, normalized weather patterns are climate change. And it's been going on since forever and ever and ever. But what happens with El Nino is you do not get hurricanes because we have a strong weather pattern with the winds basically flowing from west to east. Pushes all the hurricanes out, won't allow most of them to form. If a hurricane does form, it's usually a bad one. Andrew happened on an El Nino year, right, Robert?
Yeah, back in 91, and that one took place in August. There was no named storms until August.
And that's most likely what's going to happen this year, is there'll be little to no named hurricanes up until, you know, middle, late August, maybe something in September. But we'll have very few, if any, hurricanes. But you always have to watch out. It's like a tornado. Tornado that goes down the block and destroys the houses a block over from you is not a bad tornado, unless you live on the other block. And it's the same thing. It only takes one hurricane to make a horrific season if it hits your house. If it hits the next town or the next state, you don't notice it much. It was a great hurricane season. But if you live there, it only takes one. And that's possible this year. But far less hurricanes, little to no name storms. That's my prediction because El Nino's here. And that's what it means.
Let me add something quick before you do your wrap-up. An old friend of ours, a regular listener to this show, and a lot of people probably know him, Tim Barini, passed away a couple of weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. He was the owner and proprietor of the El Joe Bean Depot restaurant and our local El Joe Bean historian.
Yeah, I know Tim.
Tim was a great guy. Listened to our show on a regular basis. Whenever I went in there to get something to eat, he would always comment on it. Tim, we're going to miss you.
But I've been friends with Tim forever. What? He passed away?
Yeah, he did.
Wow. Okay. Tim was a pretty awesome guy, and he was, what I always loved about Tim, he was so passionate about the history.
Yes, without a doubt.
You know, I love history, and all of us history freaks, you know, Robert and I like facts and histories, and, you know, obviously you are, Jay. And that's the way Tim was. I mean, I've talked to him for hours on end about the circus performers at Joel Bean, and, you know, and we've just, you know... No, Tim was a great guy. I just kind of a little shocked.
Yeah, well, when you stop in El Joe Bean Depot, hoist a beer in his honor while you're there.
Yeah, wow. So, anyway, is there music that we're leaving with, or are we just saying goodbye?
Well, give us a close, and I'll turn the music up as you're doing it.
Well, this is Fish and Frank here, and this has been another weekly report of the fishing news of Southwest Florida. Robert, our roving anchor man, has been doing updates on where the fish are. RJ in the control center. And Fish and Frank, we're gone. Goodbye.
I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.